I mean, one of the things that we just did actually last week for a professional development and learning opportunity for all staff, all teachers, is really focused on the brain and behavior. And we really looked at it through that neurosequential lens and trying to figure that out. And so all teachers heard the same presentation throughout the district, even though we have 7 buildings. Everybody mm-hmm. got to hear the same message delivered by our student services staff, our counselors and our psychs and others who leaned in together and developed a great presentation to be able to deliver to everybody so that we're consistent in our belief systems and our approach, because behavior has become a big challenge across the state and the nation. And essentially, how do we respond to challenging behavior for kids? So we want to be consistent and we want to be able to monitor that. So you're right, universal approaches really are what we believe in. And we start there. We always start at 0-1.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Brighter Together podcast. My name is Janet Courtney, and my special guest today is Dr. Julie Harris. Dr. Harris is the Director of Student Services at Pulaski Community Schools in Pulaski, Wisconsin. Julie, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. It's really an honor to be here.
I'm glad you agreed to come on. I would love to hear about what's happening up in Wisconsin.
Yeah, so we're doing really great things here in Wisconsin, all around the area, essentially. But in our school district in particular, the district is a little bit under 4,000 students. And we've been really keen in on all students here, focused on universal learning for all students, and then breaking it down to providing those individualized services when students need them. There's all kinds of work that's going into that. There's universal training on social emotional learning. There's universal training on academic intervention work that we're doing. Really strong approach to helping make sure that we serve all students.
Awesome. So how long have you been in this role?
Yeah, so I'm just beginning my 4th year in this district.
Nice.
I, prior to coming here, though, was in a few other districts. I was in a rural district for 20 years. And I served as a school psychologist and director of special education pupil services there, combined role. And then I went to an urban environment in the Green Bay Area Public School District. And that was much different, where I was an associate director of special education, very focused on setting processes and procedures and putting together systems work there, which was really amazing. Met some amazing people there, educators who really were making a big difference in the lives of students in a larger system. And then I ended up in a district down by the Milwaukee area, a little suburban district, shouldn't say little, just a little bit under 2,000 students at the time, right around there. And really focused on, what it was like to be in a suburban district. And, in that environment, it was really amazing because it was like the perfect pyramid almost. The 80-20 was real there, and it really got to key in on that 20%. So now I'm in like a rural suburban type of environment that's growing exponentially here. And so we're putting that systems level work into action here as well, and seeing some really nice results over the last couple of years.
So what would you say are your biggest wins? Let's talk about those.
Yeah, so one of the biggest wins that we've had here is really refining our system of supports for our multi-tiered system of support. Been a lot of effort placed on designing that universal instruction, not only for academics, but also behavior. In a lot of districts, this is where it gets tough, when you really key in on the behavioral end of things. So we are really specifically targeting behavioral types of approaches along with our academic approaches by having, looking at the academic, having a high quality, viable curriculum that all students can participate in. Really leaned into the reading instruction for young students here at early grades, and provided some outstanding professional development to get our teachers up and running with that science of reading instruction at a universal level. And then bringing it into that tier two and really refining our intervention work at, when kids are need a little bit more, what do you do to extend that learning or be able to remediate some of those skills? And then when we get into our more systems processes for refining the intervention work, we're really targeting those research-based interventions, the scientific research-based interventions and evidence-based practices to ensure that we're really targeting properly our students' needs so that we can, you know, prevent students from the gaps from getting bigger.
Right.
And then essentially, you know, when we do end up providing services in special education, we're also providing that scientific research-based intervention work and evidence-based practices. And that is probably those subgroup areas are our biggest wins right now, because we're really leaning into that and making sure that we are systematic in our approach and that we have very strong administration of our intervention work and have progress monitoring to follow up and make sure that we're using data to drive those decisions. From a behavioral perspective, it's really been neat because we were able to look at a universal curriculum, especially at the elementary level, where all teachers are providing social emotional learning opportunities for all students. And then again, we are setting up those tiers so that if students need more, we have systems in place for that with our school counselors, school psychologists, and others to be able to intervene and to be able to help our students. So we're really putting the systems design work into action here at a very high level with a lot of professional development opportunities. So I'd have to say it's been an amazing opportunity to work in a district that's really focused on high quality professional development for our educators and making sure that we keep all of our focus on the students and the families that we're impacting.
Yeah, and a multi-tier system of support is so critical to keeping those kids, identifying them early, right? And then helping to get the services that they need, but keep them off of an IEP. Let's keep them out of special education services, because if we can identify them early enough and help them with where they're struggling, they don't have to go into that IEP and have this IEP for the rest of their lives. And I love MTSS. We do some work with a couple of districts with MTSS and identifying kids with OT and speech needs early on. And it's incredible, you know, just being able to go in there and go, wow, we can help and identify this problem and do some intervention and help moms and dads to understand what's going on, right? And your teachers and how to help them in the classroom, like you're talking about. And then they don't end up on an IEP. And it's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing.
It really is. And I mean, I think about, you know, so the old school way of looking at special education was we were designed to help save kids from, you know, when things got hard for them. And it might have been lower and slower years ago, where we just slow things down for kids and make it easier for them. And, you know, the research really doesn't support that model. And that's why it shifted over time, because special education is not the destination, really. Right. We really want to provide those early intervention opportunities, like you're saying, to prevent special education from occurring, because ultimately when, you know, the gap gets so big, it's really challenging for our kids. So how can we intervene early with intensity that's targeted specifically to those needs? As a speech therapist, I've always said that speech therapists are like so good at this. So you're like the experts, because essentially you are able to like really hone in on that specific skill, mm-hmm. and then provide that therapy and the intervention, and then be able to have oftentimes more kids dismissed from our services than many other areas. So I've always admired that about the ability to really target and intervene.
Well, thank you. For my profession, I thank you.
Yeah.
Because it's a passion like anything else, you know, serving kids and helping them to be successful and those wins, you know, when that light bulb, every educator will talk about that light bulb moment with a child when they just get it. And it's just, it's fantastic. And we don't, as educators, even always know how much we're impacting kids and how much of a difference we're making to their lives. And, you know, it's something that if you're not in education but you love to serve people, come on over. Well, the water's fine, even though it doesn't look like it's fine and it feels like we're in hot water all the time. We're doing an amazing job here in education, and that's why we're talking to educators like yourself, so that the world can see the amazing things that are happening and what a difference it's making. So what is your data showing you right now?
Yeah, so we're always in process of studying our data, and essentially we're building our systems. And so there are students who are making really aggressive growth, and that is really our mission, to ensure that students are making more than a year's growth in a year, mm-hmm. especially when they have large gaps to fill. So essentially, we are seeing some of our students making over a year and a half, sometimes up to 3 years growth when we get the right intervention in place, specifically in reading or math. So essentially, the data that we're really looking at is very individualized at our level, at my level. We study our universal data to be able to put, you know, the interventions in place from the targeted perspective. But at our level, we're really digging into the each individual student and trying to figure out, if an intervention is not working, what do we need to do to change to be able to help the student be able to make progress? Because that's really what we're all about, right? And so, like, maybe it's an approach that we're using. Maybe they need a different strategy. You know, it's really dependent on each individual need. But when we do see the right intervention matched with the need, the disability-related need, we really see a lot of growth oftentimes.
So. Yeah, and sometimes it isn't even necessarily. I mean, I know we call it a disability, but it's just they learn differently. When you can figure out how that child learns and where their what gets them excited. I always called it the hook. You know, it's like, as a speech therapist, what is that thing that child loves so much that makes them want to come to therapy? And if I can find that thing, then as an educator and as an SLP. Language, you know, when I'm working on language, it's like you give me a pen. We can talk about a whole language lesson on just a pen. I'm holding up a pen for those of you that are listening. But and you absolutely can, as long as you understand how language works and what works for that child, then you're opening doors for them that allows them to access something that they didn't have before. And I think that's part of what I was talking about with that light bulb moment too, because you know, when they're understanding it, you can see that with that child. And it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing.
Absolutely. And I call that like the motivation method. I've been calling it the motivation method for years. I have personal experience with having identical twins who were diagnosed with autism when they were young. They were in birth of three, received early intervention, OT, speech, you name it. Mm-hmm. And this is when I was early in my career as well. And so over time, you know, we really leaned into those motivational factors and tried to find those things, like you said, the hooks. Mm-hmm. And that works. It really does work. It works with students. It works with children all over the place. And it works with us too. What's motivating us in our lives, right? And so, you know, really keen in on what are those drivers for kids? How are we going to make it fun and motivating for them? The other thing that we really lean into for our students is looking at the environment. Sometimes the environmental factors are really contributing to the challenges that kids are experiencing. So how can we change up the environment sometimes, whether it's overstimulating for some kids or overwhelming, or there's some peer needs that they need to work on or what have you? We're always analyzing that and trying to figure out what can we do to give kids the best learning environment so they can make the most progress in their educational opportunities.
And that changes with every child, and it changes how your classroom looks from year to year to year as well, you know, because what the students that you have this year and their needs within that classroom and identifying those things is going to not be the same the next year, right? So how do you guys deal with that, with those, when you identify those things, how are you handling that?
Yeah, and it's like you said, it's very individualized. And so if there is another win that I'll just speak to is our support process related to students who are neurodiverse learners. We're able to put together a program support teacher model for a neurodiverse student specialist this year, but we have other program support teachers as well in our district. Now we developed this system for support, and it's been really neat because we can look at the environment and we can see, like, what do we need to change about that environment? There's different methods and models out there, like the TEACH model, different things like that you can look at and say, okay, what about this environment is impacting a child's experience, and how can we look at that and maybe change things up, for even if it's a little part of the day, or if it's maybe more of the day, or giving those breaks or those opportunities, teaching kids how to ask for help when they need it so that they can have a break, you know, just really thinking about it through that perspective of meeting the individual child's needs and looking at it through the lens of behavior as communication, and kids are telling us something through their behavior, and that is a need that they're trying to have met. Mm-hmm. You know, rather than looking at it through a consequential or punitive perspective, looking at it through kind of brain-based, neurosequential type of need that kids are trying to say, hey, I need help. I'm overwhelmed. And so how can they communicate that with us? And so if they are in an environment that's difficult for them, teaching those strategies and skills to be able to help them is really important. And that's what we're leaning into this year with our work universally across the district.
Occupational therapy shouldn't be one more thing on your plate. It should be a solution. Lighthouse Therapy offers school-based occupational therapy services that actually work for you and your staff. Our OTs have an average of 16 years of experience in schools, and they support everything from handwriting to fine motor to sensory integration. And you can choose from three different service models, whether it be virtual, hybrid, or in-person. It's OT that fits your workflow without the chaos. Visit lighthouse-therapy.com/brighter together to learn more. That's beautiful, because it does matter. And I've said a million times on this show, kids don't act up because they want to be bad. They don't act up because they just want to get in trouble. They're seeking something, or they're expressing a desire or a discomfort or a pain in a way that the only way they know how. And we see that as a behavior. And I love that our I don't even know what the term is, but our educational system and how we look at kids and our perspective of education and our perspective of behaviors has taken this was not what I was taught 31 years ago. I wasn't taught about, you know, the root cause of the behavior. We were taught, how do you deal with the behavior and how do you help the child to express it in a positive way, instead of finding out why the behavior was happening at all. And I have a really great friend who's a BCBA, and we've had many, many, many conversations about, you know, because that's what BCBAs do. I mean, they're really digging in and trying to figure out, how do we set up the child's environment in a way with everybody so that they don't have these major meltdowns, and how to identify when a meltdown is coming, right?
Yeah.
And it's super, and communication when, as an SLP, that's half the battle is getting them the ability to say, I'm not happy, I'm sad, I'm angry, I'm whatever it is that they're feeling, and getting those feelings out, because a lot of times it's related to feelings, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I think that's when we weigh in and we utilize our evidence-based practices. Yeah. There are so many approaches out there that have been proven to be effective. And like you said, 30 years ago, maybe that wasn't so much a case, right? This has evolved over time. And the reality is like taking those practices and using what works and what has been really shown to be effective, I think is super, super important. And that's something that we're really focusing on as well. And has been a nice win for many students and for families too. So that families are having different experiences at home. Their children are not as stressed out when they leave us. They have the service and the supports that they need, so they're not like working over hard during the day, and they can get home and have a better evening. Because sometimes that does happen. I mean, kids are really holding it together all day long. It's a very difficult, challenging place to be sometimes. Everything's moving fast and furious for them, you know, even more so than maybe a neurotypically developing child. And we have to recognize that and meet parents where they're at. So another thing that we're really focused on this year is family engagement. How can we communicate with our families? How can we lean in and be able to provide that information for families, the support that they need, the you know, how check-ins, like how did my child do in school? You know, if it's a weekly check-in or more frequent, you know, someone might say, well, that's just a best practice. Well, it is a best practice, but sometimes it gets ignored. And sometimes we just need to put a little more intentionality in the way that we communicate with families, and make sure that they know how the days are going for kids and celebrate the successes as well. That's one of the things I've learned the most is when students do make gains, no matter what their ability, when they make gains, celebrate every success, whether it's small or large. You celebrate the successes with the kids, and they're going to find more joy in the journey.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. And I've said this many times on the show, but I'm going to say it again. When I would see a child at the beginning of the year, I would always tell parents, take a short video of your child right now, where they're functioning right now, especially as an SLP working on articulation, because those sounds, all of a sudden they get them and they're speaking and they've generalized it to their, you know, extemporaneous speech, if you want to use a technical term, and conversation. There we go. We like our terms, don't we? But they don't always see it because we're so close. You know, we're so close to our kids and we're seeing our kids every day that we don't always see those changes. But I'll tell you, that video, that audio, that will tell you where they were in August and now it's June. And you take and listen to that, go back and listen to that. And it's eye-opening because we're trained to hear it. We're trained to see it. We're trained to celebrate those wins. But when a parent can see concrete evidence like that their child has made so much progress, and it's like, mm-hmm. Look at this, look what you're doing. And I've had kids also over the summer, all of a sudden they figured something out, you know, over the summer, and it's like, ooh, where are we need to adjust your goals, girl, you're not even there anymore. And I've had that happen before too, and it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. And it's so impactful and so easy now with phones, mm-hmm. to be able to just hit that record button and record your child for a few minutes and see where they are, and then go back to that video in, you know, 6 months or a year's time, and it's so impactful. So yeah, I keep saying it. Yeah,
such a great way to be able to look at growth. Mm-hmm. Love that.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Growth. Awesome. So, Julie, where do people go if they want to learn more about what's going on at Pulaski Community Schools?
Yeah. So they are more than welcome to contact me. You know, they can reach out to me via our website if they're interested. Contact information's on there. We also have a great administrative team. Be happy to introduce anybody who's interested in the universal approach that we're using, to our assistant superintendent of teaching and learning, as Dr. Jenny Graciani. So I can introduce to that, or a superintendent, Allison Space. So there's multiple people in our district who are just really invested in this work. Beyond them, we have a great learning leader team. So like, we have principals that are 100% invested in this. We have monthly meetings, if not more frequent. We have a great process of really designing our goals that are universal district-wide goals that then funnel into the buildings. And then we have coalitions, guiding coalitions in the buildings that are helping to ensure that all of the goals are aligned and they all lead up to the district mission and the district plan, which is to make sure that all students are making growth, all students. Mm-hmm. So essentially our systems of support are really strong from an administrative perspective as well as that professional development perspective. So there's a lot of people here that can speak to this because we're doing the work together. We're mm-hmm. highly aligned, very aligned in our systems approach here, which is really, really neat. And you know, sometimes districts, I've been in, like I said, all areas, rural, urban, suburban, and every district is unique. And they've all been wonderful, you know, and they all have their strengths and they all have their challenges. And a lot of times, sometimes seeing models that are really effective can just give people ideas. And right. Sometimes we will go out and visit other school districts too and see what is working for them so that we can improve ours as well. So we are always open to having people come in and learn together with us, because that's really what this is all about. You know, yeah. From my perspective, our perspective, it's like, you know, how do we help each other out? That's what we're here for. Mm-hmm. We're in education for a reason. And if we are here to be able to support students and families, let's do this together. It doesn't need to be in a pocket, in a little Pulaski silo. It can be like bigger than that, and we can all help each other out, you know, across the state. Our state's really good. They're very supportive. Department of Public Instruction in Madison is very supportive for us too. There's a lot of great organizations, like for my end, the Wisconsin the Council for Administrators with Student Special Services. It's such a great organization that really provides a lot of learning for us as special education directors and leaders. So there's options there too to be able to lean in and learn what different approaches to help all students.
And I love that it's, you know, you talk about universal. That means everybody. You're training everybody, and it's so critical to have everybody understand the systems that you have in place, and so that everybody's pulling in the same direction, right? It's like, it's not like this push and tug and tug of war between one way or another way, which is so incredible for the kids, because when we look at the child as a village and we're teaching as a village, which is what you guys are doing, the child is going to win, and that's what you're seeing, which is fantastic. So congratulations. That's amazing.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, one of the things that we just did actually last week for a professional development and learning opportunity for all staff, all teachers, is really focused on the brain and behavior. And we really looked at it through that neurosequential lens and trying to figure that out. And so all teachers heard the same presentation throughout the district, even though we have 7 buildings. Everybody mm-hmm. got to hear the same message delivered by our student services staff, our counselors and our psychs and others who leaned in together and developed a great presentation to be able to deliver to everybody so that we're consistent in our belief systems and our approach, because behavior has become a big challenge across the state and, the nation. And essentially, you know, how do we respond to challenging behavior for kids? So we want to be consistent and we want to be able to monitor that. So you're right. Universal approaches really are what we believe in. And we start there. We always start at tier one.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. Well, Julie, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show. Truly, you guys are doing some great stuff and the kids win. So keep it up. Keep it up. And awesome. Thank you for your time. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you so much.
You bet.